I was fortunate this week to interview Nadine McNeil, otherwise known as Universal Empress. She is a teacher based at the Yoga Barn in Ubud, Bali. I first met her a couple of years ago as a student there, and her voice, her energy is invigorating but also peaceful. I think if you do one of her online classes, you will see exactly what I mean. She is an incredibly impressive teacher, a wonderful woman, and I really hope that you enjoy listening into our conversation. Sadly, I was meant to go to Ubud this week, and obviously that's not happening, but I feel like we did really have a great conversation as far apart as we are.
Hi,
Kat. Hi, Nadine. Look, let's kick off with, can you introduce yourself for listeners just with your name and where you're living, what you're doing at the moment?
Sure. My name is Nadine McNeil. I am from Jamaica. I presently live in Bali. Here in Bali, I am part of the full-time faculty at the Yoga Barn. Mm-hmm. In addition to teaching yoga, I also host weekly women's circles. I'm also a transformation mentor, what some people like to call a coach. Mm-hmm. I'm a writer. And I am a curious human being.
I love that, and I would fully endorse all of those things. Can you tell me what life is like in Ubud right now? Because I don't know what the regulations and laws are there. But is Yoga Barn still running classes where people attend?
Classes, for lack of a better word. We're currently running classes online. Mm-hmm. Yoga Barn closed its doors around the 14th of March, and mm-hmm. the doors still remain closed. Mm-hmm. Ubud in particular, Bali in general, has not yet gone into full lockdown. Mm-hmm. But every day there's like another level or another dimension. The place is completely quiet and empty. Mm. A lot of shops have closed and moved out. There are lots of empty shops around. Mm-hmm. Supermarkets have altered their hours. They now close somewhere between 5 and 7 p.m. Mm-hmm. And life is really very quiet. The beaches have closed. So for those of us foreigners, Westerners who still remain here, many of us are people who have lived in Bali for a very long time, mm-hmm. or visitors that made a conscious choice to remain here.
Mm-hmm. And how are you finding it? I mean, how has your mood been? Have you noticed that it's made a big difference to your daily life?
Wow, that's such a rich question, Kat. You know, every day is different. I am very lucky that I happen to enjoy my own company. I mm-hmm. live alone. Mm-hmm. So there are aspects of this that's really wonderful, just to really be with yourself and read and explore. And, you know, I'm enjoying cooking my own food, mm-hmm. you know. But I also, being human, have emotional roller coasters, as we say. And, you know, if moments of anxiousness come up or feeling sad or agitation, I acknowledge them and I try to be with them or move through them, be it through my yoga practice, you know, going for a bit of a swim in the pool. I'm able to still take walks. Mm-hmm. So it's a challenging time, but so far it's a manageable time, I think. You know, we're not at the point yet of utter lockdown, as I said earlier, and you know, looking around what's happening across the world, earlier on today I sat on a 6-hour telethon that the government of Jamaica had put on together with some of our musical fraternity, and just to hear what's happening there, I feel grateful that this is where I have found myself at this time. It's a place that inspires me. I love my little home. Mm. I'm still able to eat properly at an affordable price. Mm-hmm. And there's a real sense of community for those of us that are here.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me where you live in Ubud and what your home is like?
I am very close to Yoga Barn. I live 7 minutes walking distance away from Yoga Barn, sort of in a bungalow-type setting, part of a shared community. So I'm not in your typical sort of Balinese-type housing. This is more of a serviced apartment kind of arrangement, which has lots of green around it. I have a little garden. The kitchen area and living area is semi-open. My bedroom is closed and the bathroom is also semi-open.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. I didn't realize you lived so close. That must be... Is it noisy, though, living that close?
Well, funny you should ask that, because prior to being here, I was north of Ubud, and actually there was noisier than where I am now. I was blessed to find this little gem. It's like this little place tucked away at the end of a street. Mm-hmm. Occasionally you might hear them cutting the lawn or something, but it's generally very quiet.
That sounds fantastic. I've got to say, I do understand what you mean about, I think being a writer and a creative and a yogi, even from a very young age, I've spent time in my own company and I don't struggle with it. So all these people, you know, a week into social isolation, posting, oh my God, how will we survive? Are you okay? I kind of went, this is actually, it's pretty good in a way. I feel more creative. I feel like I have to call on some resources that I've got. So I think in a way, the yoga practice prepares us for this, but maybe also if you're called to the yoga practice, then you've got those resources within you?
Of course. I mean, we all have, we have some things in our toolkits, and I think one of the opportunities of this time is that it really demands or invites you to go into that toolkit and see, how can I self-care? How can I take care of myself? And for those that are listening, as we share together, it's by no means easy. You know, for example, from a technological standpoint, I am not a techie. I am a content person. That's what I enjoy doing, mm-hmm. and that's my strength. And so where I now find myself, since this lockdown or semi-lockdown, my learning curve has been huge, because I'm shooting classes at home and having to compress files and send them off to places and doing events on Zoom, and how do you set a camera that you get it at a right angle. I mean, there's a whole wealth of information that I've learned for myself. And also, prior to this catastrophe, I would have held back because there was this limiting belief, my stuff isn't good enough, why am I not doing this, da-da-da, no one's going to like it, there's so much else out there. And you know what? Mm-hmm. I had a ton of content, and one of my favorite sayings is that luck is when preparation meets opportunity. Mm-hmm. So once this came out, this is what I did, put the stuff out there, and the feedback and the encouragement has just been overwhelmingly beautiful.
Mm-hmm. And with the recording of the videos, because I have done your class via the Yoga Barn Facebook page, and it was wonderful, as I knew that it would be, are you recording them at home or at the Yoga Barn?
No, those classes have been recorded at the Yoga Barn. Mm-hmm. We have turned the River Dome studio, one of our newer studios, into a recording studio of sorts, very organic. We have a very small team that's working on that project. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the minute this happened, there were a small group of teachers that were immediately willing to jump into this. Mm-hmm. Some of us had already been practicing online, so it was easier for us to drop into that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what we're doing with the Yoga Barn classes, which is really beautiful, is more than just an online program, because there are a dime a dozen out there. we are actually inviting Bali into people's homes. Mm-hmm. That's what I think is really beautiful. I'd love to hear your feel on it as a receiver.
I would completely agree with that, because I think... I know that as a teacher, quite a few of my students got in touch on social media, and a lot of them don't use it or barely use it. So I know that for them to hunt me down on social media was a trek in itself. But they said, can you make some videos? And I actually, you know, I don't feel comfortable on camera doing that, to be honest. But on top of that, I sort of felt like, there's a zillion and one YouTube channels. There's constant Zoom people everywhere. I didn't feel like it was something I wanted to add to. And I had avoided actually doing online classes. But when I saw that Yoga Barn was doing them, perhaps it's because I was meant to fly out to Ubud next week. I just felt like, if anyone and anywhere had the classes and the feel that I needed, then it is, it's you and the other teachers that I know and respect at Yoga Barn. And to be able to bring that little bit of Ubud into my home, which you really do get the sense of just from where the camera is located, that was the major draw card for me.
Yes, yes. Thank you for sharing that feedback. And just to say something, what you said resonated for me as well, because that's one of the things I've questioned a lot going online. Do I add to the noise?
Mm.
Or what can I bring to the noise? And again, I have to be mindful that I'm not being disrespectful, because so many of us are coming out and really sharing from our hearts.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose the way I want to say that is, do I add to the silence? Does it add to the silence?
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, if you have a connection with someone, that's who people want to see. People want to do a class with Kat Woods or Nadine McNeil,
mm-hmm.
because whatever it is about us as human beings, that's what resonates for them, and that's what they're missing as they are locked up in their houses.
Mm-hmm.
So it's another extension of how we build relationships. I'm really fascinated to see, once this is complete, how we transition back into brick and mortar. That's mm-hmm. going to be interesting.
Yeah, I think... I think as far as adding to the silence, that's absolutely what I was getting at. And I feel like if you could do it to the quality that the Yoga Barn has done it, and perhaps with that sense of teamship that would come from having someone there operating the camera, someone helping to set up, the way that you've got that real team environment at Yoga Barn that I've always loved, I think that would change things. But... to be honest, the idea of setting up my iPhone and recording a half-baked, not very good quality video, that's not how I want to present to my current students or to new students. So I think it comes down a lot to quality, and certainly seeing... I did a Zoom call last week, and just seeing the quality of it, I'm sure some teachers don't mind, but I do. I don't want a fuzzy sort of weird sounding thing coming out. I just, if I'm going to teach the same way I would with bricks and mortar, I want it to be the best quality that I'm able to get across.
No, I'm with you completely, because you know, it's funny, because before we did our call, I asked whether or not we're actually going to see each other, because I personally have a thing about people showing up in their bathrobes with their hair looking like a mess,
mm-hmm.
trying to sell me something. You know, just because we have access to the visual doesn't mean that we're not supposed to show up properly dressed. When I do my women's circles, which I've been doing every Thursday at 6 p.m. Via Zoom, I get properly dressed, the house is cleaned up,
mm.
I actually set up a physical circle that the sisters are able to see. So I totally get where you're at. And it's one of the reasons I have backed off personal classes. I will still do a couple of classes each week on my own with the yoga with weights. And I run them through Instagram Live. But to do it through Zoom or something like that, I hear you.
Yeah, I even just felt a little pain in my tricep when you said that, because I have done your yoga with weights and it kills me. It's a tough class.
Yes, it's not a walk in the park, that's for sure.
That is definitely for sure. So let me get to my next question. I guess, what's unique and special about Yoga Barn, and how long have you worked there? I guess, how did you become part of, the full-time team there? Because I imagine it's pretty difficult. There must be a whole lot of teachers who want to be part of it.
Following the 2004 tsunami. And so I've known Yoga Barn pretty much since its inception. Charlie, Megan, Deck, the owners, are very dear friends of mine. And I had been coming back and forth to Bali for years. Once I left UNICEF, I was very involved with the Bali Spirit Festival. In fact, I think in 2014, I was actually the director for Bali Spirit Festival. So it was, you know, I've been involved with the organization of Yoga Barn, Bali Spirit Festival, from day one. So it was one of these things that happened almost organically. And yeah, I feel really very blessed to be there. And you know Bali, and you know the essence of Ubud as it is. And whoever is meant to be in Bali and at Yoga Barn finds themselves there.
Yeah, I remember from the very first time that I experienced Yoga Barn, as soon as I left Bali, I knew that I would be back, and I knew that I would be back a lot. I have toyed with the idea over the years of whether I could live there, and I don't know. I don't know, but that, I think that's because I just don't know enough about... I think I'm so used to this very structured life of, I know my taxes, I know the laws, I know the councils. I guess it's that jump that you make, but certainly you would have had that just moving to Indonesia for work in the first place.
Exactly. And I think one of the things that happens, like you, you know, I visited several times, and each time I visited, I fell in love with the place even further, and then eventually you make a choice.
And once you made that choice, was it smooth? Was it easy?
Yeah, that's I don't even know how to answer that question. As I remember, a friend of mine said something: the things that you expect to be easy in Bali can be challenging, and the things that you expect to be challenging can be easy. So, you know, it's you ride the waves of anything else. I, you know, from my UN background, where I've lived all over the place, you know, settling into a different culture is something that actually I do quite easily. So that aspect wasn't difficult. So adjusting has been smooth. And, you know, it's really a question of acceptance. You know, you accept where the place is at. There comes a time every now and again, once you've been here for a while, where you feel like you have a real desire for a Western sort of living. And then you hop on an aircraft and go there and enjoy that. And, yeah, one of my philosophies in life, as it were, wherever you are, be there fully. So if I'm in New York, I'm in New York, and if I'm in Ubud, I'm in Ubud.
And do you do a lot of travel?
Generally speaking, yes. Clearly, the universe had other plans for us in 2020. In fact, I had a whole range of travel set up this year that, based on where we find ourselves now, has all been cancelled. I had returned, I taught at the South Africa Spirit Festival in Cape Town the first week of March, which was spectacular. Got back to Bali, ready to prepare for Bali Spirit Festival, and, you know, all of those events have been postponed. But generally speaking, I travel a fair bit, yes.
Yeah, I didn't even think of the Spirit Festival being cancelled. That's so disappointing.
Yes. Well, it's postponed. We're looking at about more or less the same dates in 2021. But yeah, all of these festivals, the Prague, funny enough, Prague Spirit, I know they've shifted their dates. And I guess what has happened is a lot of festivals and events have been waiting to see how things would evolve. But what was very telling for me was a few weeks ago when I heard that Wimbledon was cancelled, and I went, well, if Wimbledon is cancelled, you know, and the truth is that no one is in the thought process of leisure travel at this point, you know, so it makes sense to postpone all of these things.
Well, initially I postponed my flights and I was given a 6-month period, but I have a surgery that's been postponed as well. And so with this uncertainty, because all the hospitals have been devoted to the virus, I had to cancel the tickets altogether. But it's one of these things for me where I think, I know that I will go to Bali as soon as I'm physically capable of doing it. It's a place that I don't know if you even remember what it's like as an outsider, but it's a place that when you feel like you need to go, you end up there.
Exactly. Bali invites you home. Bali is one of these places I find that calls you in, you know?
My fear, one of my fears about moving there would be, do you feel like you are welcomed there once you move, or do you constantly get reminders that you're not local?
That's an unusual question for me, Kat, just based on the places I've lived in the world. I certainly feel very comfortable here, and I'm very respectful of the Balinese culture and Indonesian culture in general. So I do not, feelings of unwelcome is not a reality for me here.
That's brilliant. You worked with the United Nations for, I think, over 2 decades. Can you tell me what in that experience prepared you to be a teacher of any discipline, but yoga in particular?
I would probably flip that question over in my response. I came to yoga as a result of my work with the UN, working in emergency response and logistics, hitting burnout. I had always had an interest in physical activity, so my entry into yoga was more from the asana standpoint. As I started to hit burnout, I had a teacher who recommended pranayama, breath work. As my interests in yoga deepened, I then felt I wanted to know more, so I went off to India and did my first teacher training at the Shivananda Ashram in southern India. And then...
How was that?
Oh, it was extraordinary. One of my most profound life experiences. And at so many levels, I knew that I wanted to do my first immersion in yoga in India. That was the one thing I was clear on. I really wanted to be in the land, in the medicine, around the chants. Yeah, just deeply steeped in that. And so that experience I was gifted to enjoy. And when I completed my YTT, I had no intention or clear intention of teaching. Having said that, I remember when I did my first practice teach, I was thoroughly lit up and engaged. Mm-hmm. And so I returned to Jamaica after that, and a friend of mine who owned a studio offered me the opportunity to teach there. And, you know, one thing led to another, and I think the two things have worked beautifully. Certainly at Yoga Barn, I see or Yoga Barn as we knew it, almost as the United Nations of yoga. Everyone goes through Yoga Barn eventually.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm very comfortable teaching to a vast demographic. A lot of my early yoga work was in so-called marginalized communities, working in prisons, inner city communities, highly urban communities.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think it's just been a natural, organic fit, really.
And so how did you meet Charlie Megan and, I'm so sorry, Deck?
Well, as I said earlier, when I was based in Jakarta with UNICEF, I would come to Bali for R&R, and we met at, I think, a charity event that I believe, in fact, was put on for Bumi Sehat during, this was following the tsunami, and we just stayed in touch from there. You know, the community was small then, it wasn't hard to meet people of like mind.
And how closely do you work with them when it comes to designing your timetable, your classes, and how you work with Yoga Barn?
How closely do we work? I mean, we work close enough and in harmony. There's a shared discussion, as it were, what it is you have to offer, what your strengths are, how does it align with the other products that are being offered.
And so do you have a vision for what the future looks like for you, or how you'd like it to look?
And so it's certainly something to reflect upon. I would, coming out of this, I want to feel more grounded. I really want to have my home, my base. You know, it's been, while it's been beautiful on the one hand being here, you know, my mother is in Jamaica. I'm still very much connected to Jamaica at a soul and cultural level. I'd like to see myself in a loving, wholesome partnership with a healthy male, and doing more, moving away from studio teaching, and more of my speaking engagements, personal development, coaching of that level. And I think the world is going to be super ready for that, because you know, there are a bunch of people who are doing work on an individual level, and I certainly feel that who we are after this will certainly be transformed, and companies will need to look at how do they return to business. There is no returning to business as usual. Everything is going to be highly unusual, and what we're realizing, or certainly what I am seeing, is that we have underestimated the importance of human connection. Ultimately, we all want to be in relation with ourselves and each other, and we all want to love and be loved. That is the human universal condition.
Yeah, and I the other thing I would say about that is when I'm not teaching, I'm writing primarily for media, sometimes for agencies, but a lot of that already was work that I did from my home base, whether it was in my lounge room or a cafe. So I already had that flexibility, and I really had to take ownership of my own routine. And I think the fact that so many businesses now have seen that they're able to have their staff work remotely and deliver, to my mind, that's only a good thing. It opens up opportunities that might not have been available to us as creatives before, where there was a demand that you had to go into an office and you had to sit there and be seen to be doing things. I think if we're doing the right thing right now as employees and delivering our work from remote environments, that opens up so many opportunities to speak, to write, to build more work in that regard as well.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I personally think we're looking at a minimum of a 9-month transformation process, mm-hmm. because everything has shifted. Companies will be looking, well, really, do I need to have buildings here with people sitting in cubicles, mm-hmm. when they can be productive at home? People are, chances are, in preparing. I mean, the domino effect is extraordinary. Mm-hmm. It's so far-reaching.
I agree. That's new to me that you see yourself in Jamaica. I think we spoke maybe 2 or 3 years ago, and you seemed quite certain, but maybe it's just my memory of it, that your future was Ubud, that your future was perhaps not in your homeland.
Yeah, that's really interesting, eh? I oscillate from time to time with Jamaica. You know, I've also spent this morning on a 6-hour telethon and just really missing my mother at this mm-hmm. point very mm-hmm. deeply. And Jamaica will never not be in my life. It's mm-hmm. just not a part of the equation.
Mm-hmm.
I think 3 years ago I moved here in 2015, so I must have been just about a year or so in here. And, you know, life changes.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing I do know is that I will always, well, who knows what always is,
mm-hmm.
but travel, chances are travel will remain a very intrinsic part of who I am, because,
mm-hmm.
you know, I've done it virtually my whole life.
Mm-hmm. And I think perhaps the more you travel, the better you're going to handle this current situation, because in a way, when you don't have a very solid, secure home base all of the time, you have to find that sense of solidness in who you are.
Mm. Yes, excellent point, yes.
Mm.
Yes.
One thing I do recall you saying, because I always find it really interesting when teachers reveal something about the way that they teach, and I think it was something I hadn't perhaps cottoned onto, was the fact that you quite often reinforce the direction that you've just given by repeating it. And it's funny, because it wasn't until you pointed out that you do that I'd really recognize that you do that, and you'd said that it was something you learned in the UN, that in a time of crisis you sometimes need to repeat yourself because people have been in such a chaotic state they don't get it the first time. And I think, can you tell me any of the other techniques that you use to really make people feel safe in your presence and in your class?
One of the things, coming back to my how integrating my UN work with my yoga work and here in Bali,
mm-hmm.
increasingly a lot of our guests at Yoga Barn and people rolling through, English is not their first language.
Mm-hmm.
So bearing that in mind, I tend to repeat things for that reason. The other thing that I also think works is creating a sense of relatedness through giving examples or storytelling or actually painting a picture.
Mm-hmm.
And really, so one of the things you may hear me say, for example, is that the yoga happens on the way to the asana, not at the arrival of the asana. So many of us in our practice, the physical aspect of the practice, we're rushing to get into Warrior One, or we're rushing to get into a headstand, that we actually miss the journey along the way. And, you know, the whole essence of our practice is to be here fully, be here now. So you want to journey through each step so that when you arrive, you're completely there. Oftentimes, there's way more space, more room for expansion in our practice, but we're so focused on getting there that we miss the sweet spots along the way.
Mm-hmm. And so how do you encourage people to experience those sweet spots?
Slow down. Which is exactly what the universe, I mean, where we are right now, at the risk of sounding crass, is that we've been told to sit down, slow down, and shut up.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what this thing is saying to us,
mm-hmm.
at varying degrees of brutality. But, you know, if we can slow down our practice, then the practice becomes our teacher. Mm-hmm. I think it's one of the things that's happened with, you know, with yoga in the West, is that we've gone into this sort of mechanical sort of process where let me just do this, where it's let me just be this, let me embody the practice. And the only way that's going to happen is when you slow it down enough so that you can taste it, feel it, breathe through it, lengthen through it, expand, ground all four corners of your feet into the earth, wrap those shoulder blades onto the midline. All of those things are so important in the practice. Mm. Otherwise, I may as well just say, right, cat, warrior, two, bull.
Yeah, look, I think that's, when you said that, I think any of my students listening will know, one of the things I say over and over again is slow down. And it's funny because it was actually Pilates that I first noticed people doing it. It was the first class that I taught. But people were really speeding things up, and I initially thought they were doing it because I wasn't teaching a hard enough class, and so they were trying to make it harder. And it wasn't until I actually stopped and said, is it not hard enough, that someone in the front row said, it's so hard, we're just trying to keep up. And so that they were actually, I'd been trying to make it harder because I thought that they weren't finding it hard enough. They were finding it so hard, they were speeding up out of fear. And it was then that it really clicked for me that people aren't necessarily speeding up because they want to be better and faster and stronger. Maybe they're just afraid. And so if you keep allowing people to move in that really fast, mindless, I've just got to keep up way, that's not yoga, that's aerobics, I don't know.
And again, that same principle that you've just shared is, you know, for me the mat becomes a mirror.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell so much about a human being just by how they put down their mat, how they enter a yoga space.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we've done is we've busied ourselves in life. We have to have coffee, breakfast, lunch, dinner, get our nails done, our hair, and we're constantly on the treadmill of life.
Mm-hmm.
And so that reveals itself when we get to our practice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, now it's coming up to 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and even though I've been up since 4 a.m., I really haven't. On the one hand, it might seem as though I haven't done much, but I've done a ton. You know, whereas in the past I'd be like, oh my God, I have to do this, and da da da. And it's like, hold on, you know, you do without doing and everything gets done.
Mm. Yeah. So there is one more question that I have for you, and that is, both you and Denise Payne, who we both love dearly, have championed braveness and mercy at all times. Can you tell me what that means to you?
Funny you would ask me that. Yes, Waheguru, as Denise often says.
Yeah.
champion is really courage, you know? And for me, courage is fear that has said its prayers. When we're brave, brave is bravery. There's an absence of fear in bravery. Courage, on the other hand, is feeling afraid, acknowledging that you're afraid, and moving through with divinity, acts of grace, the God of your inner standing. Mm-hmm. And interestingly enough, at the start of this year, I said that my word for 2020 was going to be courage, and I had no idea what I would be living into when I chose that word, you know. But show up just wherever you are, be there fully, and just show up with your heart wide open. You know, you gotta have an open heart in order to be brave or courageous. Mm-hmm. Closed hearts cannot entertain bravery or courage because they're shut down in fear. Mm-hmm. A shut heart is a closed heart is a fear-filled heart. A brave, broken heart, cracked wide open, is a fearless heart.
Mm-hmm. And what about mercy?
Yeah, mercy. What would I say about mercy for me? There's a bit of mercy that speaks to compassion for me. Lord, have mercy. I know what I want to say, and it's not coming out as I want it to. But there's, as I'm speaking to you, my hand is at my heart center. So, you know, mercy is that melange of compassion and forgiveness and tenderness and love, you know. It's a pardoning at the highest level, as it were.
Yeah. And not easy.
No. Not at all. Not at all. Yeah.
I want to thank you very much for taking the time to speak to me. You are my teacher, so Vahe Guru. I hope that for the rest of both of our lives we remain in contact, because I am very interested in what you do and where you're doing it. And I hope that we see each other in Ubud very soon too.
Yes, me too, and thank you so much for this opportunity.